Professor Meltlake just floated back a few inches when the shockwave reached her, otherwise unaffected. She turned her longer, more traditional dueling cane toward Mizuchi.
Let the children leave. I'll give you the entertainment you want.
Oh, no. And deprive you of your motivation? Why would I do such a thing?
Mizuchi turned toward us, the students.
In fact, if you're so concerned...
Meltlake didn't say a word. Her cane just flashed, and an inferno roared outward, overtaking Mizuchi in an instant. The intensity of the fire was so great that I could feel the heat even hundreds of feet away. The flames continued to swirl and smolder for several moments before vanishing utterly. Mizuchi turned back toward Meltlake. Her dress had been burned away, revealing purple scales in the place of skin. Only her face and neck looked human, and those looked like they'd been barely singed.
Hmm, you're not bad, but...
Another blast of flame leapt out of Meltlake's cane. She waved her offhand a moment later, and something within the fire detonated. The room trembled, the glass roof above us shattering. A sphere of white enveloped the spot where Mizuchi had stood, then faded. Mizuchi remained, of course. I could have expected no other result. But this time? Her skin and scales both looked just slightly cracked. Mizuchi snarled and moved her hands together, forming a ball of lightning and hurling it back toward Meltlake. Meltlake gestured upward. Wall of stone! The floor of the room cracked as a rectangular section of stone rose, blocking the lightning blast. Mizuchi charged and slammed a fist into it, shattering the wall into pieces. Meltlake backed off a step, then flew upward and yelled, "Evacuate as soon as you can move!" I could see a handful of people in the guest section were doing just that. I didn't recognize them, but they were rushing for the door. A couple students had managed to do the same, but only a couple out of thousands of us. Mizuchi gestured, and a blast of lightning came from above, like a true bolt from the skies. It slammed into Meltlake, and she tumbled downward, hitting the floor. Smoke rose from Meltlake as she stood. Mizuchi rushed forward, aiming a claw for Meltlake's chest, and then that smoke gave way to fire. Mizuchi's claw hit the aura of fire and burned. She hissed, pulling the claw back before it impacted. Meltlake raised her rod and pointed at the center of Mizuchi's chest. A thin line of white fire of blinding intensity blasted out from it. Mizuchi blurred and appeared several feet away.
That might have actually hurt me. You've become quite the nuisance.
Professor Meltlake coughed. Blood was streaming out of her nose. She raised her rod again, but Mizuchi was faster. Mizuchi shoved both hands down, ducking under Meltlake's next blast, and touched the tiles. A section of floor beneath them instantly changed from stone into deep water. Meltlake fell as the floor shifted, before she could react. Her aura of flame extinguished. Mizuchi, however, stood on the water as if it was solid stone. She tapped a finger against the water and it froze solid, entombing Meltlake inside. I need to move. I pushed my mind harder, to move faster, but nothing was working. I couldn't shake myself free.
Now then, Mizuchi turned toward the guest section. Who would like to be next?
Meltlake burst out of the ice right behind Mizuchi, her body once again ablaze.
Haven't you heard how I got my name?
The water that she'd emerged from was burning. Meltlake put a hand on Mizuchi's shoulder. Then Mizuchi burst into flames. Mizuchi roared, her scales cracking further at the intensity of the fire, then swung around and drove a fist into Meltlake's chest. I heard a gasp of air from Patrick as his mentor flew backward, smashed into a stone pillar, then landed hard on the floor, unmoving. Mizuchi shook herself, as if wet, and the flames on her skin and scales vanished. I could see tiny rivulets of blood running between the cracks. She'd been burned badly. Not invincible, then. But even Meltlake couldn't put her down. I needed to do something. I struggled against the compulsion, managing a few strangled words.
Necklace. Message. Karis, help!
The necklace flashed for an instant, then died.
This room had been protected against communication magic, too. I had no way to call for help.
How wonderful, Mizuchi dusted herself off. That was unexpected. Anyone else?
A blade constructed from raw mana slammed into the side of her face.
She didn't even react.
Lord Teft slashed at her neck next, but it failed to break through her skin.
Nothing but an irritant.
She plunged a hand straight through his chest.
My eyes went wide for just a moment.
Then the body detonated. The explosion of mana sent Mizuchi staggering back right into the swing of a second Lord Teft.
Simulacra,
I realized with a hint of relief. Mizuchi growled, swinging a fist as she turned, but the other Teft ducked the strike and jabbed her in the ribs. It was just as ineffective as before.
They can't hurt her, though. He's just buying time. His weapons are just mana constructs. They must have taken his real dueling cane at the door.
I need to do something. I focused my mana, trying to push the power from my right hand all the way through my body and into my enchanter attunement, but it worked too slowly to be effective. My friends were clearly struggling too, but none of them had managed to stand or speak. We couldn't move in the slightest. With one exception. Marissa's hand was trembling. She was the strongest of us. Almost strong enough to fight off the effect.
If she can get free.
It was a fraction of hope. Not nearly enough, but I had to try.
Mara,
I managed a feeble whisper.
Take my hand.
Mara's eyes turned toward me. Then I heard her grunt with effort as she began to make the monumental effort of moving her hand toward mine. We were lucky. We had already been in contact when I tried to teleport us out of the area with my circlet. Her hand wasn't far, but every inch felt like miles. I struggled with every fraction of my own strength to move my own hand toward hers. On the stage, Mizuchi finished battering another Lord Teft, which exploded on her like the last. Another glowing arrow struck her from behind, but it simply shattered against her scales without effect. One of the house guards charged from one of the sides of the room, jumping through the air and swinging a gleaming blade. Mizuchi pointed a finger, and a tiny beam of light pierced through the guard's chest. The guard landed, took a single ineffective swing with the glowing blade, and then collapsed.
I'm so glad you've all decided to provide me with a hint of entertainment, at least.
She spun, catching Lord Teft's conjured weapon.
But alas, all good things come to an end.
She yanked the phantasmal dueling cane out of his hands and plunged it into the very much real Lord Teft's chest. He fell backward, clutching at the bleeding wound.
Move!
My hand slid an inch. Marissa's hand moved 2 inches more. Our fingers brushed against each other. Mizuchi turned toward the fallen group on her stage.
I suppose I should clean up this mess.
She waved a hand. A wave of fire blasted outward, engulfing the still struggling bodies on the stage. Teft managed to roll off the platform and avoid the fire, landing hard on his back.
The others were not so lucky. I heard screams.
I really hoped that Allura wasn't one of the people on that stage. We weren't exactly friends, but I still needed her help.
Move!
Our hands slid further, but not quite enough. My strength was waning. My mind was burning. Cecily leaned over and toppled into me. Her weight pushed me further. My hand landed on Marissa's. I activated my Arbiter attunement, shoving every bit of mana I had into Marissa. Her aura flared, then changed. It was burning orange as she stood.
Mara, box,
I managed to whisper. But it was too late. Marissa was already moving. Mizuchi hopped off the stage, turning her head downward toward Lord Teft.
You fought well, all things considered. You have my respect.
She raised a hand, which shifted in form into a blue-scaled claw. Then she swung it down at Teft's neck.
Star descends from sky!
Marissa slammed a glowing fist into Mizuchi's face. Mizuchi stumbled back, just a step, staggered by the strike. And, at the point of impact, the cracks that Meltlake had made began to spread.
Interesting. Mizuchi cracked the knuckles on her claw. A student. I didn't expect any of you to be able to struggle.
Lot of folks underestimate me. Marissa shifted into a fighting stance. Lot of folks lose.
Oh, how delightful. This one thinks she's a fighter.
Mizuchi lunged with a claw so fast I could barely see it. Marissa just shifted her head slightly to the side, then brought a knee up toward Mizuchi's gut. Mizuchi responded quickly, blocking with her own leg, and then stepped back. She tilted her head to the side, examining. Marissa didn't give her a chance for much analysis. She swept a hand out in a chop. When Mizuchi didn't bother to block, Marissa reshaped her shroud into a blade just before it impacted against Mizuchi's shoulder. A thin line of red appeared across Mizuchi's scales. Mizuchi turned her head downward, inspecting the damage. Marissa had hit her on the right shoulder.
Impressive.
Mizuchi turned her eyes back up to meet Marissa's.
I think I'll kill you next.
She swept out with a claw again, but Marissa sidestepped the strike and responded with a jab of her own. Mizuchi caught Marissa's hand and squeezed. Marissa screamed, smashing Mizuchi with her other fist. Mizuchi barely seemed to feel the impact, but she let go. Marissa's right hand was a bloody mess. She cradled it against her chest, breathing heavily.
That was a truly exceptional effort, and you should be commended for it.
I tried to move again, but I had no strength left. I'd given everything to Marissa. I had to keep trying anyway. My eyes searched from side to side, searching for something, anything I could use. Another glowing arrow of light flashed from the guest section. Mizuchi turned, caught it, and hurled it straight back at the archer. The archer ducked out of the way, drawing another arrow. Marissa punched Mizuchi in the spine with her good hand. Mizuchi hissed, spun, and swung a kick at Marissa. Marissa hopped backward, ducked, and then swung her good hand upward in an arc, launching a shockwave of cutting force. It hit Mizuchi with no effect. My eye settled on something. The mana regeneration bracer on Patrick's arm. It had a store of my mana inside. If I could get to it, I couldn't move, but I could still feel the auras of my objects against my body. The mana regeneration bracer was an obvious candidate, but everything I'd enchanted myself had a bit of my own mana in it. I wasn't wearing much. Most of my items were in the Jaden box. I'd been afraid that anything unusual would be taken at the door. But I did have my Phoenix sigil and my mana watch. It only took the slightest sliver of my mana to connect with their capacity runes, and then, rather than pushing mana into them, I began to pull. Marissa dodged another one of Mizuchi's swings, but she stumbled and fell backward. Mizuchi took advantage of the opening immediately, launching a kick at Marissa's chest. Marissa raised an arm to block, but the kick impacted with such force that it carried her off the ground, throwing her backward a dozen feet. She hit the ground and tumbled into an expert roll. She managed to make it back to her feet before Mizuchi hit her again, this time in the right shoulder. Marissa screamed, then jammed her fingers toward Mizuchi's eyes. Mizuchi just moved her head to the side, then kicked again. Marissa hopped back, slower this time, and began to circle back around to where she'd first attacked. I didn't know why she was going that way, but I couldn't think about it. I poured my effort into draining the mana out of my items. I drained the mana watch completely. As much as my mind was screaming that I needed it, I knew rationally that it was less important in the middle of a fight. And for once, my self-control was stronger than my fear. I drained the shield sigil about halfway. I needed the mana, but I wasn't going to leave myself completely defenseless. With a little bit of my mana restored, I concentrated, forming a longer thread of mana out of my right hand. Then, with a hint of transference mana, I pushed the string toward Patrick's bracer. I missed. I pushed again. Marissa dodged another swing, hopping onto the stage. Mizuchi hurled a blast of lightning. Marissa focused her shroud and slashed it in half, just like Karis would have. But she wasn't at Karis's level of skill. Not yet. The blast was weakened, but it still hit her, sending her into a series of convulsions as she fell to her knees. Mizuchi hopped onto the stage, casually.
Are we done now?
She threw a swing at Marissa's head. Marissa ducked the swing, then rolled off the stage. Mizuchi hissed.
You're beginning to irritate me, girl.
Good. That means I'm starting to warm up.
Marissa hopped to the side as Mizuchi lunged at her. Mizuchi landed near Teft. More specifically, she landed inside what looked like a bear trap composed of raw mana. The trap snapped shut around Mizuchi's leg. She screamed. Teft, still on the ground, waved a hand. Chains of mana appeared around Mizuchi. Then columns of mana shot upward all around her, each as thick as a fist, like the bars of a prison cell. Mizuchi snarled, straining at the chains. They cracked but didn't break.
Now!
Teft yelled, his voice somehow strong in spite of his injury. The archer fired another arrow. Mizuchi twisted, snapped the chains, and caught the arrow in a clawed hand. But that was just another distraction. Alora Theus appeared right behind Mizuchi, a swirling ball of air mana in her hands. Professor Meltlake pushed herself to her feet, wiping blood from her forehead and pointing her cane. They attacked Mizuchi from opposite sides. Alora hurled the sphere of mana, and Meltlake conjured a tremendous torrent of flame. When the attacks impacted, they mixed, and wind, when mixed with flame, combusted. The resulting explosion rocked the chamber, unattended tables and chairs aside. I had to brace my feet to keep from falling over. My ears rang. A large section of the floor around where Mizuchi had stood was simply missing. Nearby, the tapestries nearest the center of the room caught fire, spreading smoke. Alora stumbled back, falling onto the stage. Meltlake collapsed, blood streaming freely from her nose. When the smoke cleared, Mizuchi was almost unrecognizable. Not because she was wounded. Rather, because she had abandoned the frailties of the human form that she had chosen to mimic. Vast wings had wrapped around her, shielding her body from the flames. The skin on her face had warped and fallen away, leaving only scales. Four horns protruded from the top of her head, and her spine gave way to a long tail that ended in spines. She was not in her true form. Not a serpent. But she was closer. And those few things we might have called injuries were entirely gone.
It has been many years, her voice was stronger now, the pulse of mana in her tone, since I have been forced to wear this form.
Her hands, both clawed now, grabbed onto the bars and pushed. The bars began to buckle almost immediately.
You have done well. Each of you should be proud to have survived this long.
I still felt the compulsion to remain still and silent, but it felt weaker. The spell must have lost some of its potency when Mizuchi shifted forms. Moreover, the mana I was taking out of the items was already pure. Mizuchi's spell had only affected people, not the mana stored in items.
If I can just get a little more...
Mizuchi smashed a clawed hand through the few conjured bars of mana that were still surrounding her. Most had been obliterated by the combined attack. Alora took one look at Mizuchi and snapped her fingers, vanishing.
I didn't blame her in the slightest.
Alora must have broken the anti-teleportation runes, I realized. That's why she took so long to attack.
I hope she gets us some help.
Necklace! Message, Karis!
Help! The necklace flashed again, but faded immediately.
Alora must not have broken the anti-communication runes.
Maybe she hadn't even broken the anti-teleport ones, so much as weakened them or made an exception for herself.
What else could I do?
I could whisper, but that wasn't much on its own. I tried to move my other hand toward my pouch. If I could reach the Jaden box, maybe... Mizuchi growled at the spot where Alora had been a moment before.
Irritating. I suppose she will have to be dealt with at a later time.
Mizuchi turned her head to Meltlake next, but the professor was unmoving on the floor. Next, she turned back toward Marissa. Marissa had taken the time to get some distance, at least. She'd run almost back to where the rest of the students were. She was only a few feet from the closest student tables. That distance didn't last more than a moment. Mizuchi moved faster now, appearing in front of Marissa.
I think you could have been a hero
if you'd lived long enough. Mizuchi's tail slammed into Marissa, spines piercing into her arm. Marissa fell to a knee.
No! I heard Patrick yell.
He was standing now. I turned my head to him.
Patrick! Box!
I was insistent enough that I managed to get his attention. Patrick reached into my bag and pulled the box out.
Good idea, Korn. I'll take things from here. Retrieve Dawnbringer replica!
His sword appeared.
Patrick! Wait!
He stuck the box in my hand. Then he began to run. Mizuchi smashed Marissa in the jaw, sending her tumbling back and ripping the spines free from her arm. This time Mara didn't get back up. I looked hopefully toward Teft, the last person that I knew might be able to intervene. His eyes were closed. He'd been close to the epicenter of the explosion, and he was badly burned. I couldn't tell if he was just unconscious or dead.
Resh, what can I do?
You lasted a long time for a child. I'll give you the honor of a good send-off.
Mizuchi took a deep breath. Marissa didn't move. Mizuchi exhaled, a wave of lightning exploding out of her mouth. The same lightning breath that had nearly annihilated us when we'd been hundreds of feet away just 10 weeks before. My eyes widened as Patrick charged into the path of the attack and swung a sword that gleamed like a mirror. Mizuchi's draconic breath struck the blade and rebounded back at her. The blast flashed across the room in an instant, slamming straight into Mizuchi and sending her crashing into the opposite wall. The stone splintered on impact. When Mizuchi extracted herself from the wreckage, she bled.
Where? Mizuchi snarled. Did you get Dawnbringer?
She's not Dawnbringer,
Patrick replied, raising the gleaming blade.
I call her Bright Reflection.
Mizuchi howled. The room trembled, stone shaking and cracking apart. But I didn't tremble. I was done trembling. I stood.
Retrieve Selyse Leanne. Retrieve Ring of Jumping. Retrieve Saris.
Sarah was rising too, and I could see more other students around us breaking free. That reflected blast must have hit Mizuchi hard enough to loosen her control on everyone. I passed Sarah the crystalline sword. I slipped the Ring of Jumping on and raised Selyse Leanne. I paused for one moment, considering.
Retrieve Karras's blood.
A vial of blood appeared.
Summon Karras Salarian.
Nothing happened.
Resh, the box hasn't had enough time to recover yet.
I shook my head. Store Karras's blood. Then I took a step toward the fight.
Don't go,
Cecily managed. She was still sitting, shaking.
You promised we'd leave together.
We will. But for the moment, I have work to do. I turned my head toward Sarah.
Think you can manage your bigger summon?
Not a chance. I can barely summon Veneve.
Veneve himself was still struggling to get free of the spell, but showing no sign of success. He didn't have enough mana to work with, and he couldn't purify it like I could. I nodded.
Then I guess we're doing this the hard way.
Mizuchi extracted herself from the rubble. Many other students were free now, not just a handful of us. Most of them were fleeing the room. Sarah and I resisted that tide, pushing forward to stand next to Patrick. The three of us stood together in front of Marissa's fallen form. We would not let Mizuchi get closer to her. Not one inch. Mizuchi walked toward us, almost casually, her tail twitching behind her. She glanced at each of us, then back toward Patrick.
Is there someone just giving out legendary magical swords to children? Because I'm fairly certain I recognize all three of those.
Patrick tilted his head downward.
Turn back, monster. You will find no further prey here.
Oh, you're a brave one. Almost as brave as your friend was. But you saw what happened to her, didn't you? Broken, beaten, battered.
Alive, Patrick managed. That's a better result than you seem to be aiming for.
Mizuchi gave a smile that was very definitely Fang's now.
I like your spirit. I'll enjoy breaking it.
She vanished. I was ready for that this time.
Haste! I was swinging at the spot just in front of Patrick in an instant.
I didn't need to be able to see how fast she was moving if I could predict her behavior. Celise Lien cracked against the scales on the side of Mizuchi's arm. She whirled toward me as the ice began to spread. Sarah jabbed at her from the other side, leaving a gouge in Mizuchi's scales. Mizuchi turned around toward Sarah, but Sarah stepped back and raised her offhand to point.
Bind!
A swirling ring of symbols appeared in the air around Mizuchi, then contracted until they touched her scales and disappeared. Mizuchi tilted her head downward.
Really? You're going to do that right now?
She shook her head.
You think you can turn my own powers against me? Let's see you try.
I swung at Mizuchi again while she was speaking, but she just stepped to the side. Patrick threw a blast of lightning, but it bounced off Mizuchi's scales without effect. Mizuchi pointed at Sarah, producing a blast of flame. Sarah waved upward, raising a wall of ice. The fire blasted straight through it, hitting Sarah. I saw her barrier shatter on contact, and she flew backward and hit the floor. Mizuchi turned, shaking her head.
Amateur.
Sarah shuddered on the floor, smoke rising from her torso. Patrick screamed and lunged. Mizuchi caught his sword in a single hand.
You're right, she said. It's not the real thing.
Then she snapped it in half, flipped the broken blade around, and plunged it into Patrick's chest. He stumbled back a single step, gasped, and then swung again with his broken blade. Mizuchi just stepped to the side. Patrick fell forward and joined Sarah on the ground. I jabbed toward Mizuchi's throat. She batted the sword out of the way with ease, then swung her tail at me. Jump! I blasted myself backward, avoiding the swing.
Oh, interesting. You've got a bit of spark. But now this one,
she pointed toward Marissa, still on the floor,
has no one guarding her.
A sphere of flame manifested in her hand, glowing brighter and brighter. Then the fireball moved, but not toward Marissa. Sarah was still on the ground, but she'd crawled closer to Mizuchi and lifted her sword. The ball of flame moved into Sarah's blade, causing the sword to glow red. Then Sarah swung it right into the back of Mizuchi's leg. The sword bit deep, and flames burst out of the wound. Mizuchi screamed. She kicked backward, hitting Sarah in the shoulder hard enough that I saw Sarah's shoulder pop out of place. Sarah hit the ground and screamed herself, the sword slipping from her grasp. I aimed the tip of my sword toward Mizuchi's eye. Jump! Mizuchi caught the blade. Her hand began to freeze.
Irritating.
She pulled her hand back, shattering the ice, and then swung her other claw at me. I couldn't dodge effectively without releasing my sword. Instead, I sidestepped to diminish the impact and focused on the mana thread that was still connected to my shield sigil. I felt the shield's power, and I moved it all into one spot, right at the point of impact. Her claw hit the barrier and rebounded off the focused shield. My shield shattered. It had blocked her blow, barely, but that one strike had taken up the entire barrier. I responded while she was surprised, channeling transference mana into my offhand and punching her in the chest. It was like punching a solid stone wall. She didn't even budge. She released her grip on my sword, shaking her head, then swung her other claw at me. Jump! I wasn't fast enough. Her claw gouged a wound in my left arm before the power of the ring carried me out of the way. And then, by the time I'd oriented myself, Mizuchi was in front of me again. She was just that much faster than I was. I made another jab with Celise Lien, but she manifested an aura of flame around one hand and batted it harmlessly out of the way.
I am curious where you got that, but not curious enough to keep you alive.
Mizuchi raised a claw, an aura of electricity manifesting around it and growing thicker by the moment. I tried to step back, but she lunged too quickly. She would have hit me if someone else hadn't hit her first.
Star descends from sky!
The attack was now all too familiar, but it wasn't Marissa who executed it. Professor Conway slammed a fist into Mizuchi's face, knocking her back just a few feet.
Go, Corrin! Get your friends to safety! I will hold her as long as I can!
I stepped back to disengage. My left arm was burning from my wound, but fortunately the regeneration function of my Phoenix sigil was dulling that enough to keep me somewhat functional. Professor Conway jumped and kicked Mizuchi in the chest, knocking her back further. I found Veneve, finally moving, dragging Sarah away from the battle. "Can you get her out of here?" I asked. Veneve nodded, looking determined.
"Corin,"
Sarah coughed. "Grab Marissa too, if you can," I instructed him. "I will." Veneve slung Sarah over one shoulder and Marissa over the other, then took flight. I found Cecily pulling the sword fragment out of Patrick's chest. He wasn't moving. "Can you get him out of here?" I asked her.
"Not alone,"
Cecily replied. Then she added,
"Not being stubborn, I physically can't carry Patrick."
I nodded. He was pretty heavy. And honestly, I didn't know if he was even safe to move. That chest wound looked pretty bad. I knelt down and put a hand on his chest, focusing my mana. I hadn't practiced healing magic, but this wasn't exactly a good time to be picky. At least I'd read up about the theory. I concentrated and poured life mana toward the wound, then spread it and began to conceptualize the type of damage I was trying to repair. Bone and muscle began to knit themselves back together. I wasn't going to try to heal him completely. I just needed to try to stop the bleeding so he could be moved. I didn't get the chance. Professor Conway's body hit the ground a few feet away from us. I looked up just in time to see Mizuchi's tail whipping toward my face. Cecily moved faster than I did. She reached down and grabbed her umbrella, blocking the tail and deflecting it out of the way. Then, with one smooth motion, she pulled back on the handle of the umbrella and revealed a blade hidden inside. Mizuchi swung a claw at her, but Cecily deflected it with the blade and riposted, sending Mizuchi stumbling back a step. An arrow hit Mizuchi from behind a moment later, causing her to turn and rampage toward the guest section. I turned my head toward her.
"I thought you said you weren't a fighter."
"That was in relative terms."
"Relative to who?"
Cecily shrugged, standing.
"Keep healing him. I don't know how you're healing him, but it seems to be working."
I nodded and went back to work. Patrick's chest was rising and falling, at least. I hoped that Marissa and Sarah were okay. I hadn't had the chance to check. Presumably, if Veneve got them outside, he could find a healer somewhere in the crowd. They were both wearing their regenerative equipment, too. I'd insisted on that much. I poured more mana into the wound, watching with fascination as the severed pieces of bone began to unite. I couldn't hope to do anything about any internal damage he suffered. I didn't know how to diagnose it. Once the wound was shut, I stopped and switched to casting a lesser regeneration spell. Hopefully that would work along with his equipment toward healing any internal injuries. With that done, I began to slowly lift Patrick from the ground. Cecily turned to help, and together, the two of us began to inch toward the door. There was virtually no one left at this point. Almost everyone was either dead, unconscious, or had fled the chamber. So I wasn't particularly surprised when Mizuchi landed right in front of the open doorway just before we made it there. Cecily and I wordlessly set Patrick down and turned to a sideways dueling stance. We'd done this together before as children. Of course, we hadn't been fighting the nigh-invulnerable child of a god-beast back then. We'd just been training against a very different kind of monster. Mizuchi kicked over a nearby table, looking from side to side.
"You children really are persistent. I think you're the last ones left, though."
"I'll surrender if you spare the other two," I offered. Cecily actually kicked me when I said that.
"How very noble of you. But I'm afraid I'm not interested."
Mizuchi took a few steps forward.
"A shame. I'll remember you at least. I remember the last one who used that sword against me, too."
"Sorry, Cecily. I'll try to keep her busy. Go." Then Mizuchi's hand was around my neck and she was lifting me off the ground.
"I think not. There will be no more holding me off. No more stalling for time."
Another voice came from right behind her.
"You put that boy down this instant, young lady."
I watched Mizuchi's draconic features contort in confusion. Then she turned, dragging me by the throat. Professor Vellum stood in the doorway to the room.
"You,"
Mizuchi hissed. She tossed me to the side like an unwanted child.
I hit the wall hard. I think I might have broken something. Possibly my pride.
Yes, yes. Me. Shall we have a bit of a chat?
Vellum clapped her hands together. Mizuchi's swing ripped through the air, tearing straight through Vellum. Without resistance, since the image of Vellum just wobbled a bit and then raised an eyebrow.
Come now, Mizuchi. You should know better than to believe I just walk right over here and talk to you from a few feet away.
You are not supposed to be here. Mizuchi turned her head from side to side, searching.
I'm obviously not. I thought I'd made that clear. Do pay attention.
Mizuchi hissed.
Then you will be unable to interfere with my meal.
That was a good point, and one that sent me quickly scuttling back to my feet. I raised Celeste Leanne into a guard position and began to inch my way toward the door. Cecily, however, was still on the other side of Mizuchi, with an unconscious Patrick that she couldn't move on the floor next to her.
Resh! Definitely going to have to do this the hard way.
I slashed in the air, projecting a shockwave of ice. Mizuchi turned, looking mildly surprised, and raised a claw to block the attack. I twitched my right hand. The shockwave moved, shifting its path, and slammed Mizuchi in the face. Ice formed where it impacted, and she raised her hands to claw it away.
Now! Run!
I yelled. Cecily took one last look at Patrick, then turned and ran for the door. I slashed at the air twice more, sending more shockwaves of ice to slow Mizuchi down before rushing for Patrick. Mizuchi recovered too quickly. A wave of flame enveloped her body, pushing outward and clearing the frost. She moved straight in between me and Patrick.
I don't believe I was done talking to you,
Vellum's image said.
Perhaps this will get your attention.
An explosion ripped through the air above us. The sudden noise and intensity naturally drew my gaze upward, and Mizuchi reacted in much the same way.
Behold!
Vellum clapped her hands. Vibrant colors spread across the skies as another explosion occurred.
My power far eclipses your own.
Mizuchi turned toward Vellum and hissed.
Really, old crone? You think I don't know what fireworks are?
I inched toward Patrick, while Mizuchi was distracted. Any chance was better than no chance.
No, no, dear. You've got it all wrong.
More fireworks exploded in the sky. Vellum pointed upward. Mizuchi looked, shaking her head.
There's nothing there. Just your parlor tricks. That's just the beauty of such tricks, my dear. They're all about misdirection.
Another Professor Vellum appeared right next to Mizuchi.
You were looking up when you should have been looking down.
Mizuchi glanced down. She was surrounded by a ring of runes.
By my power, by divine power, by the power of the stars,
Vellum snapped her fingers.
I banish you from this place. Be gone!
The runes flashed. Mizuchi vanished. Then Professor Vellum smiled, clutched her chest, and collapsed to the ground.
Chapter 21 Deep Wounds.
I knelt next to Professor Vellum immediately. There is no possible, rushing way I'm going to let you die before you explain what just happened. I turned on my attunement. Professor Vellum had no aura at all. That was not a good sign. I began the treatment process by panicking. Then I cast a lesser regeneration spell on her, like I had with Patrick. It wouldn't be harmful, but I didn't know if it could help either. She didn't move. Her chest didn't seem to be rising and falling. A moment of inspection told me that her heart wasn't beating either. I didn't know how to deal with that. I wasn't medically trained. I read a few pages on healing magic. It did not involve restarting hearts. I screamed for help, but nobody came. After a few more moments of panic, I realized the anti-communication runes were on this specific room, not necessarily the entire house. I rushed out the doorway.
Nicholas, message Alora. Mizuchi is gone. Need immediate medical help.
Alora Theus appeared next to me a few seconds later, wobbling on her feet. Sheridan appeared with her.
What happened? How badly are you hurt?
Not me. There are other people hurt in the ballroom. Sheridan pointed at my arm.
You are hurt.
I looked to my left arm. Blood was seeping into my tunic from where Mizuchi's claw had hit me.
I have a regeneration item on. I'm stable. We can deal with this later. For now, there are higher priorities. Professor Vellum's heart stopped. And Patrick is pretty badly hurt, too.
Sheridan frowned, but nodded.
Show me.
I led the two of them to Vellum. Sheridan knelt down, put a hand to Vellum's chest, and then winced. I turned to Alora.
You didn't happen to bring Derek or Karis with you?
She shook her head.
I couldn't teleport all the way back home from here. Not enough mana. Sheridan was at the party, just in the other ballroom with the second years. No one attacked that room. What happened after I left?
I waved a hand across the room.
A mess? Vella managed to banish Mizuchi somehow.
I gritted my teeth as I remembered Professor Conway hitting the ground near me.
I need to check on anyone else who might still be alive.
Banish?
Alora frowned.
That's unusual.
We can worry about that later. Help me find people who are alive.
Alora shook her head.
I'm going to go get more healers.
Even better.
I already sent messages to Derek and Karis to hurry here, but it's a long distance. Even with their speed, it's going to be a while.
What are the odds that Mizuchi comes back? I asked Alora.
Unlikely. Banishment spells usually take a while to shake off. Days, at least, if not longer. Not that Mizuchi should have been able to get out of the spire in the first place.
I nodded. We'd have to look into how that had happened later. I had ideas, but I didn't want to think about them at the moment. My focus was on finding and helping survivors. Minutes passed as I found anyone with a pulse and threw a lesser regeneration spell on them. With my minimal expertise, it was the safest way I could treat them without risking further harm. I had no experience with triage, but I understood the concept readily enough. I had to ignore the people who were too far gone for my meager treatment. A few minutes later, I saw Sheridan's shoulders slump. I rushed over to them.
It's done,
Sheridan said.
Vellum's heart is pumping. She'll live. For a little while longer, at least.
Thank you,
I managed. I let out a deep breath. Sheridan smiled.
It's my job. Now let's see who else we can help, shall we?
We went to Patrick next. I felt terrible that I hadn't gone to him first, but I knew a stopped heart was something that needed immediate attention.
He's doing fine, but, try not to remake any bone until you know what you're doing. You've got some bone in parts that should be cartilage.
I winced.
I can fix it before he wakes up. But here, watch.
I watched, and I learned. Hours passed. At one point, I stopped to take a vial out of the Jaden box. I walked to the area where Sarah had managed to land a cut on Mizuchi's leg. I collected what I could of Mizuchi's blood. I knew it could be extremely important. I asked Alora to check on Sarah and Marissa as soon as she got back. She reported that they were outside recovering. That was good. It meant I didn't have to worry about them immediately. I pointed Sheridan to a few people that had been alive but beyond my ability to treat. They treated some and, like me, had to move past others. Alora arrived with more healers and more guards. The guards weren't in case Mizuchi came back. They were to keep anyone who wasn't a medic from coming back into the room. There were some surviving teachers and staff that had been in other rooms, deliberately avoiding the chancellor's speech, and the second-year students had been in a separate ballroom, so they hadn't been affected by the attack. They were outside now, consoling children and directing people home. After the healers came the people who were there to move the bodies. I knew some of those bodies. The old woman who had hosted the party, Chancellor Wallace, Professor Conway. That last one hurt. It really hurt. He'd saved my life. If I'd moved just a little bit faster, maybe I could have saved his. I tightened my hands as I thought about it, but I couldn't cry. I still had more wounds to stitch, more blood to wipe off my hands. I worked until I couldn't, and then I worked some more. I found Cecily waiting outside.
You're a jerk.
I nodded to her.
I know.
Cecily looked away.
You should have just come home with me when I asked.
I shook my head. No.
I might be a jerk, but by being here I saved a lot of lives.
So did you.
She turned her head back toward me.
I was scared, you know. I'm still scared.
I know.
Come with me back home now. I don't want to be alone right now.
I shook my head. I need to make sure Patrick and Marissa recover. They're in bad shape. Cecily frowned.
But you can come with me.
We're going to be at Alorotheus's estate. She can teleport us there once she's recovered a bit more. Cecily sighed.
Everything always has to be done your way, doesn't it?
In this case, yes. Yes, it absolutely does.
Fine.
Cecily folded her arms.
But you owe me some answers.
That's fine. I wouldn't mind hearing what you think about a few things, too. Cecily and I found the other shortly later. Patrick had woken up after Sheridan's treatment, but he was still in a lot of pain. Sarah and Marissa were both asleep when I found them, huddled together under a blanket. Apparently, the healer that Veneve had found hadn't been skilled enough to treat them completely, but he'd been able to treat the most serious wounds and gave them something to help them sleep until better healers arrived. Veneve was still there, being uncharacteristically quiet. He rested his hand on Sarah's forehead. I thought she'd probably find that comforting. Derek and Karis had apparently arrived a couple hours before, but hadn't been allowed into the manor. They'd been briefed on what had happened already, and they were standing guard over our injured companions. Sheridan and Alora were both still working. I sent Alora a message with our location so they could find us and teleport us back when she had sufficiently recovered. I didn't trust my own meager skills to do any better with the healing on my injured comrades directly, so I just cast a lesser regeneration spell on each of them and sat down to rest. My hand ached. My head ached. I dipped below my safe levels in both attunements. There was no alternative as far as I was concerned. I couldn't check my mana watch. I disabled it by draining out of it during the fight. Still, I knew I was deep in the negatives. I didn't care. There were too many cases where even a basic regeneration spell might have saved a life. After a little while, Patrick started crying. Veneve took his hand off Sarah to move closer and rest Patrick's head on his shoulder. It'll be okay. I didn't know what to say, so I didn't say anything. I waited, worried, and felt useless. Hours passed. Eventually, Alora and Sheridan returned. They took us home. We were all hurting when we arrived, physically, emotionally, or both. Derek left again almost immediately to head to the hospital where several of the wounded were taken. He didn't talk about it much, but Professor Meltlake was his aunt, and she was in terrible shape. She'd survived, but even with Sheridan's treatment at the scene, it was uncertain how long she'd take to recover. We moved Patrick, Marissa, and Sarah to the master bedroom. Alora had her household staff drag additional beds inside. We set them up side by side. Alora and Sheridan left together after that, assuring us that they'd make sure to have guards posted on their rooms as well. The chances of Mizuchi coming after us to finish what she'd started were low, but we weren't going to be foolish enough to skip taking precautions. I didn't trust random house guards to watch over us. Not after seeing that Alora's staff had already been infiltrated once. Karis agreed to take the first shift on watching over the rest of us while we slept. I promised to take the second. Cecily agreed to take a third watch. I didn't intend to wake her. I liked Cecily, but I didn't trust her. I would have expected to have trouble sleeping, but my exhaustion was bone deep. I wasn't sure I'd ever overused my attunements to that extent before. Fortunately, I was tired enough that I didn't have any nightmares about the scars that might have resulted from that. Karis didn't wake me until well after dawn. He'd let me get a full night's sleep. I suspected that was probably his intention from the beginning. Karis must have also spent the evening piecing the Dawnbringer replica back together. The blade was fully repaired when he set it down next to where Patrick was sleeping. Everyone else woke slowly in the hours that followed. Alora brought us to the dining room for breakfast a bit later, then dismissed her house staff.
Eat, she said. Then I believe we have a great deal to discuss.
We devoured a quick breakfast. Most of us hadn't had a chance to eat anything the night before, and eating was an important part of recovering from both injuries and overexerting ourselves. After that, it was time to discuss our situation.
Is there anything to block people from listening in on this room?
Cecily asked.
No, just the house in general,
Alora answered. I stood up. Can we write on the walls? Alora raised an eyebrow.
If you must, I suppose this is important enough.
I looked to Cecily. You get silence, I'll get anti-scrying. She nodded.
Right.
We set up the appropriate wards on the walls, then checked each other's work, just in case.
Satisfied?
Alora asked.
For now,
Cecily replied. Alora looked to me, then back to Cecily.
How much does she know? How much do the rest of them know?
Most of them know what I know. Cecily, I'm less certain about. She seems to know about Tristan, but I don't think she'd be aware of what happened with Saffron. Cecily looked at me with a raised eyebrow.
Who's Saffron?
I'll explain later. Or maybe now, if it's relevant.
Right, Alora said. That makes this somewhat easier, at least. A more important question, Cadence. Who do you trust?
Well, not you, certainly. Sheridan snickered. I continued. But for the most part, the people in this room already know enough about the situation that I'm comfortable sharing more. Information security is important, but I'm tired. Tired of trying to keep secrets. Tired of not knowing what's really going on. Tired of fighting people who are 100 times more powerful than I am.
A good sentiment. Although I might argue that imminent danger might reinforce the need for secrecy, rather than lead us toward eschewing it.
Alora folded her hands on the table.
Nevertheless, I believe this particular situation is bad enough to warrant a cooperative response.
Meaning?
Meaning that we've fought the 2 most dangerous people I've ever encountered in the last few weeks, and that we need to coordinate to prevent that from happening again.
Karis leaned across the table sleepily. Don't you mean the 2nd and 3rd most dangerous people? Elora narrowed her eyes.
I don't even know what you are, darling. But if you're feeling disappointed that I didn't include you, don't fret. I don't count you as dangerous in the slightest, for one reason.
Karis raised an eyebrow. Oh? Elora smiled.
It was obvious in our little spat. You either can't or won't use lethal force. Perhaps you're under some sort of persistent enchantment?
Karis chuckled and leaned back. You keep thinking that. Alora turned away from him with a victorious smirk.
Back to the point. We need to take precautions.
I nodded. I'd been thinking about the best way to approach this since last night. Did you know that attack was coming? You tried to extract me a while ago. Alora shook her head.
I didn't have the specifics. I just knew there would be an attack on heads of government sometime soon. I didn't expect it this soon.
Cecily turned to look at me with a questioning glance. I shook my head at her. She was better off not giving away her own information unless she needed to. I wanted to know what Cecily knew, but that didn't mean I wanted Alora to know what Cecily knew. At the moment, Alora probably believed that Cecily had the least information out of anyone, and that meant she would not register as a threat. I preferred to keep it that way.
You knew there was going to be an attack on the government, and you didn't do anything about it?
Sarah asked. Alora shook her head.
I didn't say that. Certain individuals were warned or evacuated, not just Corrin. You didn't warn me.
Sheridan folded their arms.
I didn't think you'd be a target. I suspected they'd be hitting a council meeting. Normally the group responsible tries to avoid collateral damage. They were avoiding collateral damage,
Sarah said.
At least more than they pretended to be.
We all turned toward her. Patrick frowned.
Sarah, I don't think sending the daughter of a god beast to a party is avoiding damage.
Sarah shook her head.
It certainly was. How closely were you watching Mizuchi?
Can you please not be vague, Sarah?
Cecily asked.
I'm not handling this well.
Sarah frowned.
Sorry. Mizuchi was able to paralyze everyone in the room with a single spell. She only used that spell once, to deliver her speech without interruption. She obliterated the people on the stage. After that, her attacks were more focused. She eliminated specific targets and fought back against the people that attacked her.
Sarah paused, taking a breath.
She clearly had wide area of effect attack spells, but she never aimed them at the students. Even when she finally used her breath weapon, she directed it in a line. A shaper of her level could have made it fork or jump to multiple targets with ease, but she aimed it just at Marissa. Sure, Mara was fighting hard, she offered, giving Marissa a nod of acknowledgement. But if Mizuchi's goal was to kill everyone, she could have spread out that breath attack, or used it more than once. You're saying, if we hadn't fought, she wouldn't have hurt us at all?
Marissa sounded terribly dejected. I stepped in. Maybe she wouldn't have hurt the students, sure. But when you stepped in, she was just about to kill Teft and Meltlake. They were both down and bleeding, and I checked. They're both alive. Badly hurt, but alive. You saved them both. Marissa's expression shifted to resolve, and she sat a little straighter after that. And I turned toward Patrick. And you saved her in turn. No one needs to regret getting involved. But I think Sarah's right.
Yes, Mizuchi was obviously holding back.
Alora waved a hand dismissively.
She could have just turned into a 10-story tall serpent and rolled around on us if she wanted everyone in the room dead. That was a message, as she said in the beginning. But that group isn't usually as messy about this sort of thing.
You've mentioned that group a couple times now, Karras adjusted his mask. It was strange to see it on him indoors. Who are we dealing with? Tales of Orochi? No, I suppose it'd be the Scales of Seiryu if it was Mizuchi.
It's neither. Unfortunately, I can't tell you about them.
Karras frowned. That's what you're going to be vague about? I think that's pretty critical to this discussion. Alora sighed, then adjusted her necklace and pulled down the high collar of her dress to expose her throat. There was a glowing runic mark on her neck. The source of that second aura I'd seen under her dress earlier. I'd wondered why she had two magical items in the same spot. She didn't. This was something different. And the rune looked an awful lot like the kind of brand that Katashi had put on my hand. The kind that I'd been told could explode if I didn't complete a certain objective in time.
When I say I can't tell you, I mean I can't tell you.
Karras leaned closer, narrowing his eyes. Well, his jaw tightened. That changes things, now doesn't it? The implication was fairly obvious, but I had so many questions. But how does it... Cecily leaned closer.
How does the mark work? Does it respond to certain words? Or is it someone listening to your conversations to remotely activate it? Oh, what if we just asked you yes or no questions?
I blinked at Cecily.
I can't discuss it.
Alora adjusted her dress and necklace, covering the mark.
Now you know there are some things I can't talk about, however, and my reason for it.
Cecily frowned.
Could you maybe just write down what your restrictions are? Then maybe we could find a workaround. It won't work, Sheridan explained. She can't talk about it, but I understand the general theory. Brands like that are designed to read your thoughts. Attempts to deliberately circumvent the brand will result in increasing levels of danger to the person with it.
Alora nodded and made a gesture of thanks to her sibling. Okay, Karras sighed. So you can't tell us about them, but this was apparently non-standard. Fine. Where can we get more information?
Tristan, I offered.
He seemed to know about what was going to happen.
But if Tristan really is alive, he'd be in the spire, right? Patrick asked. And we wouldn't know where?
The latter portion is indeed a concern, Alora replied. I can get us inside, but I always used a wayfarer to contact him once we arrived. That wayfarer is now dead. It might be possible to locate him with a diviner, but my diviner is also dead.
I winced at that, remembering what had happened when Saffron attacked. I may be able to contact him if we get inside.
A maybe isn't good enough in this case. Even if you could get him a message, he may not be able to reply. Given how things have gone, I suspect he is no longer in the position he once was,
Alora replied.
And that position is? Sarah asked. I can't talk about it,
Alora motioned to her neck. Sarah grunted in irritation.
Fine. Then we need a diviner. Even if you had one, I wouldn't be interested in taking anyone into the spire right now. The situation inside has clearly changed, and that means it could be dangerous.
Alora shook her head.
Moreover, Corrin described Mizuchi as having been banished. Is that right?
That's the word that Vellum used, I confirmed.
When you banish a creature,
It goes back to its home, for creatures like elementals. That means their home plane. But for a spire monster, Sheridan added, that means their spire.